Let's Talk with Anna Glavinsky.
And now we're talking about how rocks can whisper to us and tell stories from the earth. Anjana Katwa is joining us and she's talking all about her brand new book. It's inspired by geology. Good morning. How are you doing?
Good morning. I'm really well. How are you?
Yeah, really good. Thank you. Now, this, I love a niche topic, right? And this is niche as it gets, really. How did you end up in this world studying sort of the language of rocks, as it were?
Well, I'm a geologist or an earth scientist, so I study the stories that are locked inside the rocks and the fossils and the landscapes that surround us. And I know geology seems like a really niche subject, but it's actually all around us. It's under our feet. It's in our buildings. It surrounds us. Now, my journey into geology started probably when I was about a teenager. I'd always loved science. I was obsessed. I wanted to be an astronaut, but unfortunately that didn't quite work out. But my family are from Kenya. So my mum and dad were in Nairobi, and I was taken there as a 13-year-old to meet this massive extended family. And as you do, you kind of travel across the country, you see different things. And my parents and my uncles and aunts, they took us kids to a place called the Shaitani Lava Flows in southeastern Kenya, which is now in the Tsavo West National Park. And I kind of got out, and having seen, you know, all of these amazing landscapes and animals and wildlife, it was really the rocks that did something to me. And I got out this minivan and walked across this really incredible landscape of ancient lava flows. And so you got to remind yourself that, you know, I'm a kid, I'm growing up in Slough, which is, you know, just on the outskirts of London. I haven't really been to very many kind of places of spectacular, you know, natural places anyway. And walking across these jagged black rocks, and suddenly something in my mind just clicks, the rocks speak to me. And, you know, I'm literally in this mindset of, I want to know how these rocks got here, you know, because as a teenager, you're thinking, what do I know about volcanoes? I know they spew out loads of lava. And if I was standing here whilst this volcanic eruption was happening, I'd literally not exist, because, you know, it's quite a macabre thought, isn't it? But that's what triggered me. And for the rest, you know, for the rest of my career, against my parents, you know, kind of ideas about what I should be doing with my life, I then went on to study rocks at university, worked overseas for a bit. And and this book has come out of a lifetime of love for geology.
Now, what I get from your book, it's not just a dry topic of this rock formed in this place because of this in this time. You know, you're weaving folklore into it. It almost has a poetic element to it. It's creative, it's artistic and human, actually.
Yes, thank you. I think that's vital. I think we as a science have done a terrible job of communicating the value that rocks and landscape plays in our lives. And so in this book, what I really wanted to do was bring the human stories alongside the science. And this includes stories that have been told for tens of thousands of years by Indigenous people from all over the world, but also from my own culture. And the way I do that is just to kind of place the science that we know. Okay, we know how these rocks form. They're formed, you know, from, you know, the remains of organic creatures that lived at the bottom of oceans, or they're formed from volcanoes. But I wanted to put that really hard, complex, abstract science alongside voices that have spoken about the creation of our Earth since time, you know, for tens of thousands of years. And that was really important to me.
And so let's just clear up, because by sheer coincidence, actually, I was speaking to a guy yesterday here on the same show, and he makes music out of stones. And he wrote a book about how stones have been used to make music in different parts of the world since prehistoric times. Like, they really have a huge history of, you know, literally singing to us, you know, making sounds to us. You talk about rocks having whispers and talking to us.
Yes.
How literal are you in that sense?
Those whispers are in my mind. And when I kind of meet a rock, and I love to say that, because as a very spiritual person, as a scientist, I have two things going on in my head when I meet rocks. One is I can see the scientific creation story. Like, I can look at a piece of granite and think, yeah, you're full of crystals. And the reason why you're full of crystals is because once you were a plume of semi-molten rock that moved up towards the earth's crust, You got trapped somewhere like a magma chamber, or you got trapped in between some other rocks. You took about 2 to 3 million years to cool down. And during that time, all of the minerals inside you separated out. And as they cooled, they started to form those beautiful crystals that we see in the rock. So that's one way that I kind of view the rock through that lens of science. And in another way, I can literally kind of feel the learning that I can gain from that rock. Like the granite is telling me, you know, I took such a long time to form. Maybe you need to bring an element of that patience into your own life, that stillness. And I think this is what I mean by listening to the whispers of rock, because once you can begin to connect with them on a very human scale, they begin to come to life for you with those stories.
And you also talk about some stories, like let's take Stonehenge, for example, because that's in your book. And it's a place that most Brits know about, you know, we've heard of it. Talk us through Stonehenge, what your book brings to it, what those stones can tell us, what stories are there.
I think Stonehenge is such a beautiful way to open this book because it's such an important landmark for millions of people across the world. Now, Stonehenge is made up of three different types of stones, the blue stones, the old red sandstone, which was a new discovery 2 years ago, and also the sarsen stones. And all three rocks are completely different in the way they form. The sarsen stones are perhaps the most famous because they form the trilithons, which are those kind of the three rocks that are standing up with the lintel across the top. And those sarsens formed about 140 million years ago. They were originally started as sandy islands that were kind of in tropical seas, turquoise seas, where you know, the landscape was much closer to the equator today. And as those sandy islands, there were kind of plants and vegetation growing on that sand. And as their root systems filtered through the sand grains, they eventually cemented that rock together with silica, and that would form the sarsen stones that we see today. So there's a beautiful story of peace and tranquility in those rocks. The blue stones, which are on the outer circle of Stonehenge, they were formed by volcanic eruptions, completely different. And, you know, when I went to the solstice 2 years ago, I just felt such a connection with all of the stories of the stone. So the blue stones come from North Wales. They come from volcanic origins and they were formed, you know, due to lava flows, but also volcanic ash falling from the sky from eruptions. Now, the one that has created most excitement over the last 2 years is the discovery of the altar stone, which actually originates from Orkney in northern Scotland. So how those prehistoric people dragged that rock all the way down to Wiltshire, who knows? But that rock was formed from the ancient grains of mountains that were towering. You know, we're talking a very, very long time ago, talking about a billion years ago. But that old red sandstone was formed from the grains of mountains that were worn down by natural processes. So when we are at Stonehenge, this is such an amazing place because it's the layering of the stories of the human experience on top of science. That, for me, is what makes it magical.
And you also talk about indigenous knowledge and ancient knowledge as well. How do you marry that with scientific studies that you do and weave that into the stories in your book?
Well, I do it really carefully, really respectfully, because a lot of these knowledge systems from Maori, from First Nations in Australia to North America and Northern Canada, they have been speaking and connecting with rocks for maybe 30, 40,000 years. And so I am a non-Indigenous person, when I moved kind of into those spaces and consulted with people from all over the world, it had to be done with real humility and care. And the Indigenous stories are really quite spectacular, because what they tell us is how people have experienced a geological world for 20, 30,000 years and have passed that knowledge and observation down through generations. So those stories and songs are still told today. And what we learn is this sense of reverence, a sense of respect and custodianship that these people have felt for rock and landscape for generations that we in the Western world seem to have lost. And, you know, there's this beautiful story about Hawaii where Pele is fleeing her sister. And as she flees her sister, she begins to form the chain of islands using her digging tool, Pau. And geologists know Hawaii formed from a volcanic hotspot. So this is where magma plumes intrude into the Earth's crust, and the continental plate is moving across the across that hotspot. And those are how the islands are formed. They get younger, and where the hotspot is currently sitting underneath the crust. And the native Hawaiians knew this. They knew that the islands were older along a certain part of the chain, and that volcanic eruptions were happening on younger islands. And they knew that because they told the story of Pele as she was fleeing her sister. So I think science and spiritualities have a beautiful connection. We just need to open our hearts and minds.
And you know, looking at geology, you're studying a lot of ancient history, things in the past. But what can that tell us about today? What can the rocks from the past help inform us in today's world, in today's lives?
That's a great question. I think I was actually asked this at a geology conference about a year ago. Yeah, I know, you did. You missed out. So my answer to that was science has given us so much insight and so much advanced knowledge about how our planet was formed and created. But what it's also done is that it's divorced us personally from what nature means to us. And I think this is especially profound for geology. But it's also, you know, what science has also done is it's shown us how to extract and exploit from Mother Nature. Like all the minerals that make up our technological life, they all come from the ground. They all come from the rocks. So what Indigenous stories can help us do is begin to ground us in a deeper connection and respect for the rocks. And what that is humility. If we can be more empathetic and humble towards the way we use and extract and exploit rocks, maybe we will begin to reach a point in our lives where we aren't abusing and extracting as much from nature, more than we need, so to speak.
And well, that leads me really nicely into my next question, which is about the future. You know, what can rocks tell us about the future? And where do you stand with all your knowledge, all your studies? You surely have formed your own predictions or ideas about where we're headed. Yes. Please share them with us.
Where are we headed? I mean, as geologists, we think in enormous timescales. I think in tens, if not millions, hundreds of millions of years. And when I talk about this humility and empathy for rock, you know, there are limestones that are being blown out of mountains all over the world. And those limestones are crushed and modified to create what we know as concrete. Okay. But once we destroyed those rocks, we've lost the story. It's taken 55 million years to form. Just imagine that. And once we take that rock and carve it up, that story is gone forever. Now, in this modern world that we live in fact, a lot of geologists are speaking about this, the amount of plastic pollution in the, you know, microplastics in the oceans. Geologists are actually starting to theorize that actually those plastics are going to form the rocks of the future. And the way I look at it is, yes, that is a record of our impact on this natural system that we call the Earth. And as a geologist, I kind of think nature is a very resilient beast. I know that the wildlife and certain biological living ecosystems are suffering, but the rocks will be a testament to our impact on Earth. And as we look towards the future, we have to rely on our future generations, whoever they are, to look towards the record that we've left behind, and hopefully they will learn to treat the world a lot better than we have.
And just out of curiosity, and this isn't particularly about your book, but how do you wrap your head around such vast timescales? Like, I just can't imagine more than, 100 years ago, 1,000 years ago, a million years ago, it all starts to just roll into one sense of time for me.
Yeah, that's a great question again. So my advice, because that is completely overwhelming to hold a rock and think this is 200 million years old. The way to approach it, I think, is to think about the processes happening today. So, for example, I was just in Liverpool where a lot of the buildings are built out of a sandstone. And when I touch that sandstone, I know it's 250 million years old. But if you look at the colour, the pattern and the form, there are these kind of beautiful arcuate crisscrossing lines in the rock itself. And what you're actually touching are sand grains that were once moved by an ancient wind. And that ancient breath of wind was rolling those sand grains down the surface of a sand dune. And over time, those sand grains cemented together to form that sandstone. And you know what? That same wind is blowing across your face today. The same wind is blowing sand dunes in Namibia. And I think once we begin to step into that space of what are we experiencing now in the world? I can put my hand, you know, into a stream and feel the cold water against my skin. Well, that cold water was flowing across rivers, you know, across our landscapes hundreds of millions of years ago. And that's why we have, you know, siltstones or mudstones or limestones even. So that is the way I would recommend people get in touch with deep time. Think about natural processes and how they affect you today, because they have been operating for time immemorial.
Now, you speak with such passion on the topic. Did you enjoy writing the book? Did you enjoy putting pen to paper as well? And what did you want the book to turn out like?
Oh, it's such a privilege to have been given an opportunity by my publisher to bring my love and joy for passion for geology into the world. The writing process varied from joyful, absolutely. When you are immersed in this subject, when you're reading the papers, when you're interviewing people, it is probably one of the most fantastic places to be as a scientist and as a writer. And also as someone who is rediscovering spiritualities. At other times, it was very harrowing because some of the stories in the book really tell about the impacts of exploitation and extraction, particularly on Indigenous peoples. And when I was reading those primary sources where, for example, First Nations chief from the Lakota tribe were talking about the dispossession of their lands, you know, I had to walk away because it was so distressing to read. Now, the book itself is everything that I hoped it would be. It's this really kind of poetic retelling of the way I have always felt about geology and about rocks. And I've kind of crafted these voices of the rocks that come forward and tell their own creation stories. I never thought I would do that as a scientist, but something inside me through this process, that part of me has come forward. And so the rock is really, it's a love story. At its heart, it's a love story. And I think in these times where we feel a little bit intimidated by climate change and by other things happening in the world, this book is a real kind of sense of escapism about traveling the world and hearing ancient stories about how other people have thought about where our world has come from. And then you layer on top of that, my own love and joy for rocks and my own life experiences. Yeah, it's a dream really come true.
Well, it sounds absolutely full of passion. Thank you so much for talking to us this morning. And I do apologise if I pronounce your name wrong, but as we're on radio, I think phonetics are very important so people know what they're looking for if they're wanting to get their hands on your book. It's by Anjana Katwa and it's called The Whispers of Rock, Stories from the Earth. You can find it on Amazon or, of course, the Talk Radio Europe bookshop. Thank you for joining us this morning. Goodbye.
Thank you so much. Bye.